Hannah Harris-Green joins us now, a journalist whose work has appeared in The Guardian, which is where we found this story. Hannah, welcome to WGN.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You wrote about this really fascinating and perhaps landmark case in social media that's happening right now, I believe on the West Coast. And it really centers around the issue of, is social media addicting? And do these companies know that it's addicting and harmful to their users? I mean, that's really the crux of a lot of these future cases against these social media giants, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that the plaintiffs in these cases are alleging other mental health harms as well. So if the question of addiction is a little bit gray, there might be other ways they can do well in these cases. But yeah, that is kind of the central argument.
How do we measure addiction and how whether social media is an addiction or not?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on who you ask. I think in day-to-day life, a lot of us kind of take for granted that social media is addictive, because when we say addictive, we kind of just mean it's hard to stop using it. But from a medical perspective and a scientific perspective, there's kind of a much higher bar. And part of what needs to happen for an addiction to be scientifically established is there just has to be a lot of research and a lot of evidence that scientists agree on that say that it's addictive. And so part of the reason that, you know, scientists don't necessarily agree on this when it comes to social media is because social media hasn't existed that long. So we don't have as much evidence as we do about other things like alcohol, for example. But from a scientific perspective, the bar for addiction is pretty high. It doesn't just mean that you can't stop using something. It means you can't stop using it despite sort of severe negative consequences in other areas of your life. So damage to your body, damage to your brain, you know, losing your job, ruining your relationships, things like this. Other criteria include withdrawal symptoms. So one of the researchers I spoke to pointed out that if someone says they're addicted to social media and you take that away from them, what happens? They might just be really agitated for a while. And, you know, maybe that will lead to some other unpleasant things like insomnia. But compare that to alcohol, for example. In extreme cases, alcohol withdrawal can actually kill people.
Right.
So, you know, it's just like very different scales that we're looking at.
I appreciate that you laid that out, because at first I was going to say, well, as long as there's like a scientific showing that what the social media can do to your brain releases, I don't know, whether it's dopamine or something that gives you this high. And then I thought, well, I think that threshold's been met. But you bring up a really great point. And maybe there's still some science doubting that or not. I'm not saying for sure we know that. But I that's interesting that the definition of addiction, for this to really be proven, at least in a court of law, the idea that it has to harm other parts of your life, that is a much higher threshold. And I would also imagine that I don't know if there's like a certain percentage of people that have to be shown to have been fallen prey to the addiction to raise to that level, because there's certainly a lot of people who don't want to put social media down but are not addicted out there. I mean, I guess that's the same threshold with smoking and cigarettes and alcohol. I guess I don't even know what I'm asking, Hannah, but maybe make some sense of the idea of, like, does it have to show that 50% of people will get addicted to social media, or is there no numbers threshold?
I don't think that there is a precise numbers threshold. And I do want to respond to one of the first things that you said, which is that the plaintiffs will have to prove in a court of law that this is addictive. I don't think that the plaintiffs should have to show that there's established scientific consensus about this, partly because, you know, it takes a really long time. Like, scientists are very careful people. They're very careful with their words. And the other thing I want to say about that is that none of the researchers I spoke with said social media is fine for kids, let them use it however they want, it's not harmful. They were concerned that it's harmful. They just prefer more sort of lighter terms like problematic use as opposed to addiction. Another thing that came to mind when you were talking is that, so you asked about percentages. I don't think that there is an exact percentage of people who need to really suffer from addiction. But when scientists are looking at addiction, they look at sort of the population level. What is the average impact for someone who can't control how they use something? So someone drinks uncontrollably, what's the average impact for them? That's very different than the average impact for someone who can't control how much they use social media, right?
Yeah.
But just because those averages are small doesn't mean that these particular plaintiffs who are alleging these really severe harms are exaggerating. It just means they might be sort of extreme cases.
Right. And I appreciate you correcting me on that about the court of law thing. And you're right, because I mean, they just have to prove to a jury of your peers what they think is an addiction. It's not like there's these scientific burdens that are need to be met in place.
Right.
Certainly, they'll have experts in front of them, but ultimately, it's up to the 12 people who decide this or whoever's deciding this case to determine whether there's an addiction there or not.
Right, yeah, determine whether there's addiction and determine whether, you know, these platforms were designed to be harmful just in general, you know, whatever label you want to put on it. There are internal communications within these companies saying that these, I think it was Instagram, like someone on staff there said that it's like a drug. And there is research from within Meta that kind of does acknowledge addiction and says that people who are already struggling with their mental health are more vulnerable to addiction. So I think in the, you know, when we're just talking specifically about these lawsuits, what's more important is not does the addiction label apply, it's were these platforms designed to be harmful and did these plaintiffs experience harm?
Yeah, which is not the easiest thing to prove either, like designed to be harmful. I mean, maybe the initial intent is altruistic and maybe financial, but harmful is like another level, although those things are often tied together. The article is just really well done, Hannah, and you write a lot of great articles. I was scrolling through some of the other ones because your name seemed familiar, and I was reading about your article last month about opioid addiction and some of the reasons why those numbers may be going down. I'm like, I knew that name somewhere. But you talk about how one of the levels maybe scientists are looking for to classify something as a true addiction is that long-term use causes permanent damage, maybe not irreversible damage. And so far, it seems that experts say that while it may cause what you say temporary effects of accelerator in the brain, it doesn't affect the brakes, and that change can be reversible over time, which I guess is a hopeful message to people that feel like they're addicted to social media, but maybe not hopeful for people that are looking for an addiction classification.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's a good way to put it. And what you're talking about comes from brain imaging research that showed similarities between people who gamble compulsively and people who use social media compulsively. And yeah, it does, you know, brain imaging is like kind of like very new, hotly debated realm of science. So I don't want to say anything conclusively, but it does seem like, you know, if you've been addicted to cocaine for years, you might not be able to ever fully reverse the damage to your brain. There isn't any evidence like that yet with something like social media. So, yes, there's definitely hope for people who want to cut down.
Anything else you're following with this trial? I mean, it's going to be fascinating. This could be the first of many, almost a litmus test of what could happen next.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this trial goes. And I think that me, what's most fascinating that's come out so far is actually the research that these companies conducted themselves. Much of it looks pretty bad for them. And, you know, they might know things that they're not sharing with us, but that they will have to share during these trials because they come out in discovery. So definitely keeping an eye on that.
We had a federal prosecutor on, a federal defense attorney, excuse me, on another show I was hosting earlier this week. He said the exact same thing. He said, what I'm most interested in is what we're going to find out through discovery about what these companies knew or didn't know from their own research, which, of course, is then telling what they did with that information. It's a great read, Hannah Harris Green. Is there anywhere you want us to follow you and all that you do, or just keep looking at The Guardian and other publications for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I am on Blue Sky for people that are on there, and my handle is whatsitlike.me.
I like that. Hannah, take care. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.